Marshall and Sagar here. Welcome back to The Realignment. This is the Realignment's weekend edition. We post a conversation between me and Sagar. We take audience questions, discuss current events, and what we are up to professionally. If you'd like to hear the full version of this conversation beyond the preview, go to realignment.supercast.com. You can subscribe for $5 a month, $50 a year, or $500 for a lifetime membership. Most importantly, you can submit your own questions and comments that we will discuss on the show. On to the free section of this episode, Sagar and I are going to discuss the latest tit-for-tats in the Middle East in the wake of Iran's drone strike and ballistic missile strike on Israel and the Israeli follow-up earlier this week. I'm curious, Sagar, like, what's your reaction? What have we learned from the past week? Now that this seems that we're hitting pause, the parties are hitting pause on this specific incident. Obviously, I think we're going to be back in this position in a week or two or a month or whatever. But what would you say that, assuming this is finished for now, what have you learned from this?
That's an interesting question. I don't really know if I've learned anything. Do you think you've learned anything? I don't think I've learned very much. Everything that I thought would happen actually happened. That's my takeaway. Ooh. I have not been surprised by anything. I wasn't surprised by the Israeli strike. I wasn't surprised by Iranian caution. And I'm also not surprised by Israeli caution.
Let's just talk about the country then. So like you got in a bit of trouble online for like your initial response to, and by trouble, I mean, there were people who are ideologically opposed to you who got mad. I'm being very clear here. Who
are like trouble, very, you mean neocons got very upset.
Yeah. You got a digital spanking there. Just articulate what your position was when the US interceded into Iran's launching of drones and missiles.
I mean, I thought I've been very clear from the beginning. I'm very simple. I think Israel, quote unquote, can do whatever it wants and then it should bear the risk. I think the same of Ukraine. And my problem, one of the reason why the Israeli strike on the embassy did not surprise me is because I think that there are basically no holds barred whenever it comes to actual consequences for the Israeli regime. So then I was upset and I said, if I recall the exact wording, it was modest proposal, the U.S. military be used to defend the U.S. and not foreign nations whose interest is to drag us into a foreign war. And the reason why I found that so surprising that people were so upset about is that Benjamin Netanyahu has tried to get, you and I were born in 92, Marshall. So Every president but one of our lifetime to go to war with Iran. This is an objective fact. He tried to get W to do it. He tried to get Obama to do it, tried to get Trump to do it. And he's tried to get a Biden to do it. This is objective on the record. If you guys really want, check the tape. We can go ahead and roll it if you want to. That is literally documented. So the reason that I was annoyed is that this is and this is where I got into it with some of them, is that they were like, well, what are you saying? That America should have allowed a huge bombardment on Israel and that would have widened the war. And here, look, lo and behold, what do the stats come out and say? It's not the Iron Dome or the Israeli military that shot down the vast majority of those missiles and drones. It was America. It was the U.S. military that was doing it. So in the end, Israel carries out this strike. By the way, the Biden administration literally told them. They said, hey, if you're going to hit the Iranians, they didn't even say don't do it. Just let us know. And they didn't let us know. They didn't tell us about the Damascus strike, by all accounts. Maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe they're lying. It's possible. And so they socialized the risk. They brag about the 99% interceptor rate, which is bullshit because they didn't do 99% of the work. In fact, all current accounts say that they did less than 50% of the work. And now we're again in a position by our political construct and by the president where they can have their military response. And if there is a new response, like, what do you think is going to happen this time? And like, my basic contention has just been like, look, I think that if we want to have an ally relationship, that's great. But I believe that the word ally is supposed to be mutually beneficial. I do not think there has been anything even close to a mutually beneficial relationship that has begun since October 7th. I think that has been tremendously impactful and detrimental to U.S. national security interests. And I mean, I don't know why it's all that controversial. Again, you know, Jonah Goldberg, I'll just say it, Jonah Goldberg, the person who really does, I guess, despises me, who said something along the lines of when people tell you who you are, believe them in response to that. And I was honestly shocked by that because I'm like, what is so controversial about saying that another nation should have to defend itself whenever it gets itself into a spat? There's a good
this is where this gets complicated. So like, A, obviously Jonah was implying you're an anti-Semite, which I could say on 15 different levels,
like, hey,
you're not.
Go fuck you. No, I would say go so fuck you.
Those were like lazy fighting words.
Yeah, sure.
But here's the issue though, to push you. You said when a country needs to defend itself, when it defend itself, but Israel isn't a country, Israel is an ally. Do you get what I mean?
Well, But what does that mean? In what sense? It has no NATO obligation. It has no NATO.
It's a non-NATO ally.
Let me tell you this. Go ahead. This is the thing.
And this is why I think the Biden administration, like, look, you and I have different positions on Ukraine, but like, I felt like I was in the like Sagar Ukraine position here, because here's what the Biden administration did. The Biden administration, I think, actually pursued like the proper policy course, which was, look, you launch missiles and you launch drones against an ally of ours. We are going to shoot those down. There's no pilots in the seat. There's no death
That's not true. There were pilots in the seat. Yes, there were.
In what? I'm saying, like, you're not killing Iranians when you shoot shoot down the drones.
Sure.
You've launched these missiles, and they launched their missiles on the premise that the U.S. would like intercept. So we're going to do that. And this is where like I was pulling my hair out at like all of my colleagues to the right of me. And then Biden says, oh, by the way, Israel, we're not going to join any like offensive strikes on Iran in response to that. So from my perspective, that, and you may disagree with that, but I think that was like a good articulation of what our role should be in the Middle East with the status quo. Basically, Israel, we're going to stop this from being a mass casualty event, but we want this to de-escalate. So hell no, we're not going to send F-15s and other assets that could obviously create a bigger spiral. I think that was a very like moderate, reasonable position to hold.
Here's my counter. Is if they believed they would actually be responsible for their own defense, they never would have hit that embassy in the first place, and then the strike wouldn't have happened. And I 100% believe that. 1,000%. Here's the thing. Israel has been doing strikes in Syria for at least 10. How long was 2013? 10. Yeah. Okay. 10 years. There we go. 2024. So 11 years, they have been striking inside of Syria. I don't give a shit. Okay. You blow up some Hezbollah commanders, whatever. Cool. This is not even the first strike in Damascus. Many strikes have happened in Damascus. They hit this embassy because they felt emboldened and believed that the U.S. would respond to any sort of attack. So the embassy attack itself does not happen without the U.S. security umbrella. That's why I disagree with the premise, is that if they believed correctly that if they had launched that attack and then Iran would have retaliated, and some 50% of the missiles would have gone through. It's an unknown number. I don't know what the actual number was. But can we agree it's not going to be 99% the way that it was? If the IDF is solely responsible, right? And let's say hundreds of Israelis were killed in response or could have been killed. There's no way. They're not doing that. And so they socialize the risk to us. Now, here's my response to the ally piece. First of all, Israel is a non-major NATO ally under U.S. law. We have no obligation to defend them. We have the same designation of non-NATO ally ship for Qatar, for example. Do I think that if the Iranians were launching strikes on the city of Doha, let's be very clear here, not on Al Adeid Air Force Base, that the U.S. military should to strike that? If the Qataris hit an Iranian embassy? Absolutely fucking not. Zero. If the Qataris want to do something like that, they're going to bear the fucking costs. And this is my thing. There's always an Israel exception. This is what pisses me off. But to push you on this,
A, a world where Iran is launching this level of drones and munitions.
But why are they being launched?
My point, though, is, so two things. I think the point you're making about Israel socializing, like, and look, the real political disaster here
is
the real political disaster here is, like, look, Bibi obviously wants Trump to come back into office. So from his perspective, it's not just that the risks are socialized, like he doesn't really have the same incentive to like kind of like have Biden's back on this. So every single incentive is pushed towards escalation. What I would say though is that A, let's be real, if Iran was launching, and this is why I was focused on the fact that there were no Iranian pilots in the seat, dude, if the Iranians launched slow-moving drones and easily destructible ballistic missiles at Qatar, we would certainly shoot them down.
I didn't say that we would. I didn't say that we wouldn't. I said
I'm saying, like, actually, in my understanding of this, the U.S. actually should. But because here's the question.
Can I read you the list of non-major allies?
Real quick. Like my basic position here is the number one U.S. geopolitical interest right now in the Middle East is, hey, let's not have a mass regional war break out. A thing that would further a mass regional war would be hundreds of Israeli deaths in a situation where the U.S. could have stopped the missiles. That's why I also think, though, the way the Biden administration handled this was proper in that they shot down the missiles and then said, to be clear, we are not joining in anything offensive because, to your point, you guys basically started this. Like, that is like the underlying position here. And I guess my real problem for you is that I get what you're saying about how the Israelis are socializing the risk. The time for us to correct that dynamic is not as the missiles are in the air. And that's our principal disagreement. Like, that's what I'm saying there.
Listen, they got to pay a fucking cost sometime. And they're just, they refuse. These people are allergic to paying for their own shit. Even right now, they've got their fucking hands out begging for all their goddamn Iron Dome interceptor missiles, which wouldn't... We spent $1.3 billion defending Israel. $1.3 billion on Iron Dome that we pay for on the day of the Iranian attack. Just so you know, the actual ballistic missile interceptors that we had to respond with cost $28 million each. I'm sorry, pay for your own shit. Let me read you a list of the 18 countries that have major non-NATO allyship under U.S. law. Argentina, Australia, Bahrain, Brazil, Colombia, Egypt, Israel, Japan, Jordan, Kuwait, Morocco, New Zealand, Pakistan, Philippines, Qatar, South Korea, Thailand, Tunisia. There are maybe five countries on that list that I would say, okay, yeah, let's go all out and actually...
But pause. This is the key thing. We're not going all out. We're shooting down offensive weapons.
None of those countries are costing us what Israel is costing us right now. We embolden them. We have been backing them for fucking 70 years now at this point, and basically giving them a blank check to kill whoever the fuck they want in Gaza, in Lebanon, and in Syria. And then they are, and then we're like, this is the thing, Marshall, there's no limiting principle to what you say. There is no limiting principle.
I know. The Biden administration and me here gave the limiting principle.
But they struck back. It doesn't matter. We're going to just defend them again, and then we're going to get into a war.
This is the key thing. The risk is
still too high compared to what the fuck.
Here's a real question, right? So as you saw, once again, you and I have our debates about Ukraine. But the key thing about the Ukraine debate is, just in Ukraine alone, we saw like a global oil, just from the Ukraine war alone. Which we could debate origins, we could debate proper handling. A war in Eastern Europe caused huge spikes in the price of oil, supply chain crunches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A regional war in the Middle East, with also the nuclear proliferation implications, is that on steroids? It seems to me the American interest here, despite the 70 years of history, is what can we do to prevent escalation? That's what my policy is. I think that's what the Biden administration's policy is. And I feel as if you're trying to solve 70 years of policy that you disagree with, I think reasonably, not anti-Semitically, reasonably, as the events happen. I don't think you could do both of those things at the same time.
I totally disagree. Erase 70 years. And my policy disagreement begins on October 12th, which is the day that they announced collective punishment on the entire Gaza Strip. That's when my policy disagreement begins. It's actually only 6 months ago. Yeah, almost 6 months and 5 days ago. I think the mishandling from the very beginning has been Israel socializes the risk and they do whatever the fuck they want. And this happens over and over and over again. And I'm totally fed up with them, especially to the point where we are bankrolling them. We are emboldening not just their government, their country. And it's one of those where it genuinely enrages me because I hear what you're saying and I agree. I don't want a major and war in the Middle East. But this is the thing, is that Israeli impunity post October 7th has made destabilization and increased the likelihood of war in the Middle East. And they have socialized over 100% of that cost to the United States. The USS Dwight D. Eisenhower, the USS Kearney, multi-billion. We will never know the full cost because the CENTCOM will never tell us for real what the actual cost of the US deployment in the Middle East has been. And it is because of our defense that they have allowed themselves to ratchet up this chain. For example, whenever you and I disagreed about this, I don't know if you remember, whenever America was shooting down those Houthi cruise missiles that were being launched from Yemen to Israel. Israel, we now know, doesn't actually have real capacity to shoot that shit down. What would the signal have been if we hadn't done that? If we hadn't given them a blank check? It would have been, oh shit, our actions in Gaza are actually having some serious ramifications outside. Now, if they choose to escalate and bear more of a cost, their business. Once again, but we defend them and then they keep on going. They keep on this policy in Gaza. They keep saying, fuck you to our president, to Joe Biden. And this is the thing, look, I don't like Joe Biden, but I love America. And being, you know, just humiliated and just disdained by the Israeli regime has been disgusting to watch the way that these people act. And I want to be clear, it's not just a Biden problem. He treated Obama like this too. He treated even George W. Bush like this, you know, in the mid-2000s. This is like a basic characteristic of Bibi Netanyahu's personality. And so I think, clear retort, and this is part of what I'm saying, a lot of the neocon defense of like why it's in America's interest begins on the day of the Iranian attack. And my critique is very specifically, yes, it's about 7 years of policy, but it also begins right there on October 15th, when there is a clear departure from U.S. national security interests and Israeli national security interests. And we continue to socialize the risk and really back them and serve as their, you know, defender in the international community and militarily, with no consideration of leverage on our part. That is just not how I believe allyship should work, period. Any ally, even the most important U.S. ally, Mexico, I mean, Canada, any of these places. Like, we cannot have a situation where people who, let's be real, as we now see this Israel package going through, are, let's say, modestly 65% reliant on us for our security umbrella. Well, I say that gives us about 65% of say in their affairs. And right now I think we get maybe 5%. And I don't think that's right.
All right, now we're going to go into the paid section of the episode after that preview. If you'd like to hear the full version of the conversation, go to realignment.supercast.com. Once again, that's realignment.supercast.com. Okay, on to our next discussion issue. We're going to discuss the passing of the Ukraine aid, Israel aid, and TikTok bill that just made it through the House over this weekend.